what Gary talked about, people not wanting to change, is really one of the biggest hindrances of why people don't want to follow Christ. Because if you follow Christ, that means we have to stop following ourselves. I remember one time a conversation with an atheist, and just the opposition on things where there should have been clear agreement and just didn't seem like they were being really open to what they actually believed anyway. And then they went and they said, "Can I be honest?" Which is sometimes what people say when they haven't been being honest. They said, "Can I be honest?" And I said, "Please do. I don't want to believe in God, because if I believed in God, I would have to change." And for people that believe in God but don't want to serve Him, the thing again is we have to be willing to change. I have been working on a lesson I was going to do today and had put it together, and it was quite involved, and it had to do with some arguments against atheism. But this morning, I remembered what time of year it is and decided I wanted to do this instead. For a long time, either I or Stephen, when it comes to spring, have just done a reminder lesson about how we ought to dress and how we ought not to be undressed. And it's spring, and we hadn't done that. Now, I think it's a good time to do it, usually towards the end of winter, as just a reminder, because people like to go out. We like to go out, get new clothes. We like to shop. And I tell you what, you go into the stores and shop, and you start realizing how much of the clothing is designed for the opposite purpose for which clothing should be. The purpose of clothing was to modestly cover up the body. And a whole lot of the clothing now is designed for the opposite purpose, to expose the body. And so let's spend some time this morning. And because of this, you're going to recognize some of this, because since I remembered this morning we hadn't done that and decided to switch and do that instead of the other one, I didn't have time to make a new lesson. So it's a previous lesson with a few other slides added in. But let's go ahead and get started. Number one, just because it's in the closet doesn't mean it should be worn. Just because it's in the store doesn't mean it should be bought. Clothing purposes some statements that we make with our clothing and responsibility. First off, let's go to Genesis chapter 3. Genesis chapter 3, God has created the world. He's separated the light from the dark. He's separated the land from the water. He has made the vegetation. He has made the animals. And he has made man, male and female. He has created them. In Genesis chapter 2, he made woman from the rib of man. And of course, there was that famous text, you know, "This is now bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh," etc. And therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. Chapter 3, they are tempted and they eat the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and they suddenly have a consciousness of their nakedness, and they hide. And they have made some fig leaves and an apron or a girdle of fig leaves that they've sewed and put around themselves. And the question is, who told you you were naked? Did you eat of the tree? And then, of course, you have, after the first rebellion, you have the first excuses. And then God put some clothes on them. Now, the first thing I want us to think about there is that we are the ones that wear clothes. All those other critters in chapter 1, the fish are still naked. You know, the cats and dogs run around, they're not wearing clothes. Bulls, cows, they're running around, they're not wearing clothes. We wear clothes. And there's different purposes in clothes. But the initial purpose wasn't, it seems to be, that the Garden of Eden was inhospitable. They weren't on the frozen tundra and freezing to death. The purpose initially of these clothes was to what? To cover their nakedness, to cover them up. Clothing choices make statements. You recall when Judah's daughter-in-law dresses in a certain way, and at that time covering her head in that society indicated she was a prostitute, and thus she was taken to be a prostitute. Clothing can also be worn for warmth and protection. In Exodus chapter 22, if you have taken a poor man's cloak as collateral for a loan, he's desperate for some money, he needs some money, and keep in mind, if you go down to the bank today and say, I need a loan, you say, what do you got? Yeah, that's not going to get you anything. But in biblical times, you didn't have the machinery and such that we have now for just kicking clothes out. That was a lot of invested time in a clothing. And so here's this poor man, and he puts up his cloak as a collateral. Later in the day, he's not able to pay you back. It says, give his coat back to him so that he'll be able to be warm that night. Exodus chapter 28. The priestly garments are discussed here, and there's an interesting note there. We've looked at it before. I want you to look at it again, please. Exodus chapter 28, a lot of detail here about the priestly garments. And there's purple, there's gold, there's bells, there's caps, there's all kind of things going on. There's the breastplate with the different stones, of course, that would be worn. And then after some of these things, it had specifically said that this was for glory and for beauty. For example, what the high priest wore on his head, that was for glory and for beauty. But then in Exodus chapter 28, verse 42, there's a different type of clothing. Verse 42, thou shalt make them linen breeches to cover the flesh of their nakedness. And then it tells you how long they were to be. From the loins even unto the thighs they shall reach. And if you remember, if anybody has a question, well, what does that mean, from and to? Well, when Job was covered from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet, I don't think it meant that he didn't have any on his head and he didn't have any on his feet. I think it'd be inclusive. And of course, if it's not covering the thighs, only to the thighs, is it not covering the loins, only from the loins? Well, obviously not. So this was, and if you look up in International Bible Encyclopedia, they've got a picture of it. It was some linen breeches that would have been like this. In other words, about like modern day basketball shorts. And that's what the priest was to wear. And the text said to cover the flesh of his nakedness. Other things that he wore were for glory, for beauty, some things like that. And that's a good just, and that doesn't mean that's the only clothes that ever need to be worn, but that's something helpful to think about when you think about the standards of clothing that people wear. We too easily get into modes where we do things because it's what other people around us do. You know, I want to say something here about young children and parenting and stuff. We as parents like our children to be included in things, like our children to get to do things, don't want our children to feel left out. And that's understandable. But if we start letting that desire to make sure that they get to do everything and that they're never left out take over in areas where we need to say, no, we're not going to do that, we're missing the opportunity to teach them a lesson and to be able to understand that they're going to do things differently. What did Romans chapter 12 say? be transformed, not conformed to the world. And so I'll give an illustration on this. I mentioned those are about the basketball shorts. Basketball, if you're my age, you remember the basketball shorts guys wore in the 70s, right? Yeah, it was almost like hot pants. You know, it was silly looking to me. But, you know, and what would have been the justification that people back then would have said why they needed to dress like that? If you'd raise the issue, somebody might say, well, you're playing sports. You need to move for the athleticism. Have you watched an NBA game lately? You know, now the shorts are down to here, and they seem to be able to move very, very, very well. And this was value. I'm going to say something here. And Bertina had the same thing when she was a little girl in Alabama in the 60s and 70s, and I was a little girl. No, excuse me. Later in the sermon, we're going to talk about gender bending, and that was not a good way to get toward that. When I was a little boy up north of Chicago, we didn't know each other then, although she got our phone number. We had moved away from Alabama when her folks moved in, and they got our phone number. But we didn't know each other at that time. But I remember when I was a kid in middle school, and for PE, you know, here were the shorts they gave us, and there were these little shorts. And my mom made me use the same color, but she made me these, you know, long shorts. And so all the boys at PE, everybody looked normal except, you know, nerdy Scott. Well, Bertina was a little girl in Alabama, and on her softball team, you can imagine, in the 70s in Alabama, what, you know, girls were wearing, the styles of the 70s, so what girls were wearing for softball, the other girls on her team were wearing these little shorts. Guess what her mom did? Made her some long shorts. And so I would have looked funny there, and she would have looked funny there, but I have looked back at that and really, really appreciated it for this reason. Not because I think there would have been a bunch of girls up there in northern Illinois, you know, wanting to see my legs. But it let me know that I wasn't going to do everything everybody else did because they did it. It let me know that there were standards I would be responsible to, and that sometimes that would make me stick out. And that was really valuable because later in high school, I've got friends trying to talk me into doing this or do this, et cetera. And if I had never had to, if I'd always been able to fit in, then it's pretty hard to at a certain age. All of a sudden, now you got to be different. And what this did, it had me used to the idea, you know what? Sometimes people are going to think I'm stupid. Sometimes people are going to maybe laugh at me or think I'm dumb or look silly or something else. And that's okay. They can think that because I'm not going to do the same thing everybody else does just because they do it. And that was a valuable lesson. I say that because we can tend to do this. We can tend to think, because let me tell you, you go look at even little girls' clothing in some of the stores, and it is like miniaturized sexual looks that they're designing for little girls. And we might think, well, but it's cute. You know, it's, and she's just little, or the kids are just little, he's little, she's little, it doesn't matter. Oh, they want to go over there, and everybody's going to be dressed like that, and they're all jumping in the pool. It doesn't matter, they're little. What would be the logical next step of that? Well, we'll change it when they get older. Do you see a problem that's going to happen if you have trained your little boy or your little girl to be satisfied or even appreciating the idea of wearing very little around the opposite sex or being around the opposite sex when they're wearing very little. And then suddenly at some magic age, you say, oh, you're 16, time to stop doing that. Is that going to work very well? In other words, there's a difference between a small child and an older child, but if we're not thinking about it, we miss some opportunities to train. And there are kids that walk around. I wonder what their parents are thinking. Maybe you go to a ball game or something. You'll see somebody with their... And why are they letting their child wear that? Whether it's what it says on the T-shirt or just the lack of clothing it is, and it's right there in front of their parents. And then sometimes the parents are the same or worse, and so you see why you've got the blatant disrespect and ungodliness. So training children, even before it's a problem, but helping them have the idea that there should be some modesty, helps prepare them instead of it being just a rule given later. And sometimes we forget as adults at what age the opposite sex started really being attractive to us. All right, moving on. Leviticus 18. Sexual relationships between relations like your father's wife or your sister and such, etc. What was the metaphor used to describe not engaging in that relationship? It was what? Do not uncover her nakedness. It didn't literally mean just don't uncover it. The inference there, of course, was more than that. But realize what our culture is doing now is, to a large extent, just uncovering nakedness. Or, approaching so much of it. Deuteronomy chapter 22, verse 5. A woman shall not wear that which pertains to a man, neither shall a man put on a woman's garment. Whosoever does these things is an abomination unto Jehovah, your God. We're going to be talking about some of the things going on in our culture related to this verse in a few minutes. Proverbs chapter 7, verse 10. You remember the description? He's looking out and he sees the foolish young man, and the woman approaches him whose husband has gone on the journey, and she's luring him along. And how does it say she was dressed? She was dressed like a prostitute. Clothing makes statements. Matthew 5, verse 27 through 30. Let's turn and read that. In the Sermon on the Mount, in the section where Jesus said your righteousness has to exceed that of the Pharisees, and where Jesus has gone through and he said, here's what you've been being told, but I'm saying this. He says He says in Matthew chapter 5, verse 27, you have heard that it was said, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say to you, everyone who looks on a woman to lust after her has committed adultery with her already in his heart. If your right eye causes you to stumble, pluck it out, cast it from you. It's more profitable that one of your members should perish than your whole body be cast into hell. If your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off, cast it from you. For it's profitable for you that one of your members should perish and not your whole body go into hell. This is such an important passage in so many ways, and especially with just the epidemic of pornography problem in this country that we have right now. And we've talked about that other times. That won't be the focus of today's lesson. But just in the clothes that people wear, the man has a responsibility not to look and lust. But just as a person needs to be able, willing to get rid of that which is going to cause them to stumble, we shouldn't be dressing in ways that are causing other people to stumble. Just because it was on sale, or just because it's cute, or just because it's stylish, if it's sexually provocative, if it's causing other people problems, don't be doing that. John chapter 21, verse 7 is a very interesting passage, because sometimes people will justify certain behaviors. They say, well, but that's what you do then. That's what you wear to the beach. That's what you wear to go swimming, et cetera, et cetera. There is one passage in the Bible that talks about what somebody wore to go swimming and what they wore to go to the beach. And it's this passage. It's John chapter 21. It wasn't vacation. It was fishermen working. And it's, you know, at the beginning of the chapter, Peter said, I go fishing. And some of the other apostles said, we're going to go with you. So they went fishing. They were fishermen. And they're out there working. Well, they've worked through the night. And Jewish men would have worn a garment tied around here. And then they would have worn another garment over them. And while they're out there working, they've taken off their outer garment. And they're just in this more undergarment here. And then in the morning, and they're out there in the boat working, in the morning there's a figure over there on the shore and speaks to them, and then they realize it's the Lord. And what does Peter do? Look at John chapter 21, verse 7. The disciple, therefore, whom Jesus loved, said to Peter, it's the Lord. When Simon Peter heard it was the Lord, he put his coat about him, for he was naked, and cast himself into the sea and swam over there. He was so eager to get there that he didn't want to wait for the boat to get there, and he swam. But notice what he did. He was going to be coming up in public and over there in front of his Lord. And he didn't want to do that undressed. I remember, I'm not going to tell that story, but it's a very sad story. And it has to do with some decisions people made. And I'm not even going to get into it. 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 9 through 10. Now, this passage is not specifying so much a lack of clothing as just an over-attention and focus on the elaborateness of the clothing in the get-up. But it uses an important word here. 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 9. In like manner, women adorn themselves in modest apparel with shamefastness, my translation has, and sobriety. Not with braided hair, gold, pearls, costly stone, but which becometh women professing godliness through good works. And in the Greco-Roman world, they would sometimes spend a lot of time, you know, having their servants get their hair just right, and then you'd have all this that you'd wear. And of course, all that says what when you go out? Look at me. And this text says what? Adorn yourself in modest apparel. You're not a walking advertisement. You're to be adorn yourself with good works. 1 Peter 3, very similarly. It's talking about women that are married to unbelieving men. Even if they don't obey the word, you be respectable in subjection as wives, so that by your behavior it may influence them to serve the Lord, as they behold your chaste behavior. Verse 3, whose adorning let it not be the outward adorning of braiding of the hair, wearing of jewels of gold, or putting on of apparel. Let it be the hidden man of the heart in the incorruptible apparel of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. So, should a child of God be showing their bodies to others in clothing that is provocatively tight, low, short, revealing, minimal? And if you're looking at that and you think I'm about to show examples to each of these, I'm not. But I did that somewhat deliberately. Because how would you feel if suddenly we just put pictures up here of some really tight jeans, a tight sweater, a really low cut blouse, all these things right up? We would all feel very, very, very uncomfortable with that, wouldn't we? Why? There's a reason. So instead, we're just going to put that up there. No, that's not what should be being worn. Here's from a sheriff's office. Visitor's code. Visitors must be properly dressed before checking in to visit an inmate. Any clothing or article of clothing that are considered inappropriate will not be permitted or worn. Proper undergarments must be worn. Some clothing articles, accessories are prohibited. No see-through clothing, halter tops, tops with spaghetti straps, shorts or any other similar type of short outfit, pants that don't cover the knees, skirts or dresses that have slits above the knees, inappropriate language on clothes, swimsuits. I tried to get into the prison over here at Adams County and went through the to do studies in there, went through the training thing, went through the tuberculosis check, went through everything else, and then only to be told that they don't have any openings. But they have similar rules like this, too. Here's another one. This is from, I think, Hagerstown. Not allowed. Tube tops, tank tops, halter tops, see-through clothing, mini skirts, mini dresses, shorts, skorts, culottes above the kneecap, form-fitting clothes such as leotard, spandex, legging, clothes that expose a person's midriff, side, or back, tops or dresses that have revealing necklines and or excessive splits. And you can't, they're saying you can't come in here wearing that. Why? They don't want those signals to be being sent. Let's spend a few minutes talking about this. I will say this after my other. I once was a man trapped in a woman's body for 9 months. Then I was born. But we know what's been going on in our society and culture. There have been agendas of large portions of our, or somewhat large portions, but particularly loud portions of our society and culture, insisting on this must be accepted, this must be accepted, this must be accepted, this must be accepted. For a while, everything was about gay marriage. And what is a big, big thing now is about transgender, that you have to respect whatever a person identifies as. So if someone identifies as a woman, if a man identifies as a woman, he's supposed to get to go into the ladies' room. And you remember with Target and all that a while back. And they announced their policy, And there's a lot of nonsense in it altogether. There was an interesting interview somebody did a few years ago where they went on a college campus, and so they said, so if I tell you that I am a woman, what would you say to that? And they're like, good for you. It's a man asking the question, And of course, everybody's giving the politically correct answer. That's right, you are. And then he said some other things, and he said, he was a white Caucasian man. And I think he asked, if I tell you that I don't remember all the different things, but maybe said Asian or African, or he picked different ages. If I told you I was a 5-year-old girl, good for you. Good. And then one person, they would say, good for you, good for you. And he said, what if I told you I was 6'5"? They said, but you're not. There's gentlemen, we should not be allowed to try to go join the Girl Scouts and say, I identify as a 14-year-old girl. You are not who you're not. It's one thing to respect the fact there are men and there are women, and they should respect each other. There are people of different ethnicities, and they should respect each other. There are people of different ages, and they should respect each other. But it doesn't mean a 5-year-old gets to go and get a driver's license because he identifies as a 20-year-old. It doesn't mean that you, as a 30-year-old, get to start collecting, you know, retirement benefits because you identify as a 70-year-old. And it doesn't mean that a man gets to go in the women's restroom, or shouldn't, because he says he identifies as a woman. And on clothing, let me say this about pronouns. If you have not heard some of the ridiculousness that's going on college campuses now, because instead of that's a man and that's a woman, well, you don't know. In fact, did you know gender-neutral names are on the rise? Now, there's always been names that might be a boy's name or might be a girl's name. Terry. If you get a letter from Terry so-and-so, you know that there are some girls named Terry and there are some boys named Terry. It might be either one. You know, there's several names like that. Okay. But those names are particularly on the rise now. You know why? See, used to, they had a little girl, they liked the name Terry, they gave him the name Terry. They had a little boy, they liked the name Terry, they gave him the name Terry. But now there's a different reason. You know what it is now? Wasn't meaning to grab somebody in the audience's name. That just one popped to mind. There's a bunch of them like that. Francis is a man's name. Francis Scott Key, women Francis Scott. But those are on the rise. Here's why. Parents are saying, we don't want to lock them into a gender. We have to wait to see what gender they're going to be. You know, a farmer, when a calf is born, he identifies pretty quickly, you know, if it's going to be a cow or a bull. You know, there's some dogs born. You identify, that one's a girl, that one's a boy. But it's getting to the point where, you know, if a baby's born, is the doctor still going to be allowed to say, it's a boy? Or does he say, we'll wait and see what they decide to be? And so you've got people don't even like pronouns now. So this is from one of the universities, and it's the LGBTQIA. I don't even know what the IA refers to. And I'm tired of, I don't know how much longer that thing is going to get. So they have an online resource instructing students on the proper use of 8 different gender-neutral pronouns, including yo, xi, I, n, and va. See, because it's a microaggression if you refer to a she as a she if she wants to be a he. Or if you refer to, there was a joke on the internet the other day. There's a man having a heart attack. And a woman says, is there a doctor here? And a guy says, I'm a doctor. And it's, what's happening? Heart attack. I'm a doctor of gender studies. But he's dying. And he goes, he? You don't want to assume somebody's being microaggression and assume their gender. This is nonsense. Here's name tags. So that when people meet each other, I guess this could be especially helpful on college campuses or businesses. There were huge corporations that stopped doing business in North Carolina because a law was passed that men should use the men's room and women should use the women's room. And that was hate. And so corporations pulled out of there. So now you can wear a name tag and let people know what gender or non-gender or... And then the other one mentioned some people don't want to have pronouns at all. That some people might eschew pronouns altogether because everybody's got to have their safe space and be accepted for who they are when they don't even know who they are. Boys should grow up to be men. Little girls should grow up to be ladies. And we have a high order of nonsense being advocated. And there are parents, there are people that have brought children into the world. They're not being a good job of being parents, but there are people who have brought children into the world who then, when that child at age 3 or 4 or 5 wants to play with a certain toy or dress in a different way, and the parents decide they want to be a different gender and then start accommodating that. I know there's a young man, most of y'all know him. He's very masculine, very much man. I remember when he was 2, his favorite color was pink. That's fine, that's harmless, except, you know, is that he just liked the color pink. And I suppose at the time he would have been tickled if his room had been painted pink and his clothes were pink and stuff. But his parents decided, no, we're not going to do that. And after a while, he got to where he liked the other colors. But what do you suppose would have happened if they'd said, oh, he likes pink. He must be a girl on the inside. And started treating him that way. How many girls went through a tomboy stage when they were little girls, especially if they got brothers, and it's like, you know, and the boys are going out to play ball, and they're like, I don't want to go play ball. And they say something like, I wish I was a boy. Happens a lot. Now you know what parents are doing? You know what happens when those little girls that like getting out there and being rough and playing ball and maybe they can throw the ball, you know, farther than that boy can or something and everything. And then they grow up a little bit more and they are turning into a young lady and they get interested in being a young lady and interested in marrying a man. Now, they're still athletic and they still, you know, have fun. If there's a ball game, they can go out there and they can enjoy it. But it's not that they were not to be a girl. And now this is, parents are backing up. We will have to wait and see what gender they choose to be. What does this have to do with clothing? What will this? Gentleman's Quarterly, Blurred Lines, Why Gender Neutral Fashion is the New Normal. You see the theme here? There are clothing stores now where it's everything's unisex. You know, women getting, you know, short haircuts to look like men. Women and men, of course, variety. Oh, yeah, and can't forget the man bun or whatever. And, or whatever that is. Yeah, the bun is something else. But there are model agencies who have now hired men as women models and women as men's models. Do you just see how much our culture is just trying to blend this stuff together? And there's a real agenda here. And it is a rejection of what? In the beginning, God created them male and female. And there were different gifts and different responsibilities. You look at the curses in the garden. Eve's curses surrounded around her childbearing and her relationship to her husband. That was going to be a focus of her role. Adam's curses related to how hard he was going to need to work to provide food. And you see a relationship there, role. And for a long time, we've heard this idea, you know, that, well, men and women are not the same. Men and women are different. And it's a beautiful thing that God made that men and women are different. Let little boys grow up to be men. Let young girls grow up to be ladies. And on here, listen to this from 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Verse 14, does not even nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it is a dishonor to him? But if a woman have long hair, it is a glory to her. for her hair is given her for a covering. There's a distinction between the man and the woman. There is to be a distinction between the man and the woman. Back in the Old Testament, we saw the men were not to wear women's clothes, women were not to wear men's clothes. There are different roles in the church. There are distinctions, and we live in a culture that's doing this. Don't buy into that. Even so, it might be, well, it's covering means, but don't buy into this gender blurring nonsense. Men, be men. Ladies, and remember these principles. Thank you for your attention this morning, and that's all I have to say. But if you are here this morning and you would like to respond to your Creator, who made you, male or female, in Christ, the soul, that's a place where it doesn't matter. Whether Jew or Greek, male or female, bond or free. We need what the Galatians needed in putting their faith in Christ and their being baptized into him, Galatians 3:27. If you need to do that, you can do that this morning as we stand and sing.